The Liberals Gun Corner, a proud member of the Gun Rights Radio Network, hosted by Cowboy T, San Francisco liberal with a gun. This podcast is always available at www.liberalsguncorner.com, and you can email us at cowboyt@liberalsguncorner.com. Cowboy T, San Francisco liberal with a gun. Welcome to episode 31, folks. Unfortunately, we're not going to begin this particular episode on a positive note because of something that happened last night. This evening, it's Thursday, April 3rd, 2014. Just last night, we found out that Fort Hood suffered yet another would-be mass shooter. By now, a lot of you have probably heard about it. Three people are dead, and several others injured. I'm not sure if this is the final tally yet, but hopefully the numbers that are up there now are going to be the final ones. A guy named Specialist Ivan Lopez apparently decided he had a really bad day, and he went on a would-be killing spree. He was stopped by, well, a good gal with a gun. Folks, there is a policy on military bases that says thou shalt not carry weapons on you, especially firearms, without specific authorization from either the DOD component head or his or her designated person, or designee is the term that they use. I'm not aware of a single base where carry, outside of the MPs, the military police, or security police if you're in the Air Force, is authorized. And look what happened again. This is like deja vu all over again, folks. It's a total replay of something that happened in 2009 when this, you know, former major, now convicted, Nidal Malik Hassan, committed his shooting spree. He was stopped by a female cop, a good gal, with a gun. There's a pattern here, folks. These shooters are only stopped when they are faced with the same kind or greater force than what they've got. Matter of fact, in the specific case of this latest shooting by the now late specialist, Ivan Lopez, when that good gal with a gun showed up to stop him, he took the coward's way out and took his own life. How many more times is it going to take, folks? But what's even going on here? Why is that the case on our military bases? Well, to that. You know, even before we get into that. You know, there's the grieving of the families that's happening right now. We know that. You know, that's why I'm doing this section. That's why we're talking about this. My heart goes out to them. Those who have lost family members and those who have family members that are injured. I think all our hearts go out to them. Now, what the hell is causing this? Why is this happening? Well, folks, it's thanks to a little Google foo on my part that I found this thing called DOD Directive 5210.56, promulgated on February 25th, 1992. By the way, promulgated is some fancy schmancy military word for we put it out there. Only those who are authorized to carry firearms, basically by the DOD component head or his or her designee, meaning basically the base general, the person with the pointy things on the shoulder board there, only those people can authorize folks. That generally means only the, like I said, the MPs or the SPs, depending on the service that you're in. You can't even carry your own personal firearm, even if you have a carry permit for the jurisdiction that you're living in, like the state or the county or whatnot. Now, note the date of this. February 25th, 1992. For those of you who want to say, oh, well, you know, it's the dang Democrats. It's Bill Clinton's fault. Well, first, let's put this notion out of the way right now. That was actually during the George Herbert Walker Bush administration that this was promulgated. Now, it continued to get implemented by Bill Clinton in 1993, President Bill Clinton. And it was reissued in 2011, April 1st, 2011. How coincidental. There's a pretty sad April Fool's joke to play on the troops under the Obama administration. So it looks like both Republicans and Democrats are behind this. So let's just get the party business, you know, over with, all right? This has nothing to do with party. It's just bad policy, regardless of which one is doing it at that moment in time. Yeah. So, folks, what's going on with this? Why the mindset? Well, I've asked some folks about this. They said, well, you don't want these, you know, fresh out of high school 18 to 20-year-olds walking around with guns all the time. You know, they drink all the time and they get irresponsible and do bad things. You've seen it. They pull that. Well, yeah, I have seen it. As a lot of you know, as I've said here on this podcast, I myself am a military veteran, the Air Force. Yeah, I know, military, like you, especially those of you who served in the Marine Corps, I know. But it's still the military, okay? And, yeah, sometimes folks will get a little out of hand, they'll drink too much. Sure. But that isn't everybody. 18, 20-year-olds can walk around on the street. You know, they can open carry all they want. And jurisdictions that allow that, for example, in Virginia, open carry is allowed at age 18. I know, I live here in this state, so I know something about that law. Yes, I have seen 18-year-olds legally open carrying, and they didn't do anything wrong with those guns that they were carrying. They were just fine. Also, it insults people like, say, Dakota Meyer. You may have heard of him. He won the Medal of Honor for valor in combat as a young 20-something. You know, the kind that's ripe for drinking and acting irresponsibly. Oh, but we gave him the Medal of Honor for valor in combat. Oh, and for this, they're not responsible enough to be carrying guns on the base. No, really, huh? Then why are we issuing them fully automatic, i.e. machine gun, M4 carbines and M16 full-length rifles to go over to fight in the sand pit in Afghanistan and Iraq? How come we're doing that? Since they're so irresponsible with guns, why are we giving them machine guns and full magazines of ammunition? The 30-rounders, the original design, if they're so irresponsible. But we don't trust them with a handgun? Please, folks. This is the military we're talking about. Don't we train these people? At least we're supposed to be. It's the military. Well, I gotta wonder, is that what happens with police departments? There's a pretty good analog with which we're generally familiar, the cop departments. I used to interface with the police on a regular basis. No, not what you think, so get your minds out of there. What I'm talking about is when I used to work for the school system, I would work with cops on a regular basis as part of my job. Why? Because as a field engineer, I would have to go take the county van all over the place to fix network problems. County van needs gasoline. There are a couple of gasoline fill-up stations for the, you know, that the county owns for use for filling up county vans. One of them is at one location in the county, and the other is at the county government center, full of police. It's basically the police station. I walked into that police station a lot of times. Here's the procedure. You walk in, you show your ID to the, you know, whatever officers behind the bulletproof windows and such like that. And they say, okay, sure, not a problem. Go back to your vehicle. Once I see you get in the vehicle, they got cameras watching all this. Then we'll open up the gate for you. And that's what happened. I go back, fill up the county van with gas, and out I go. No problems. I did this regularly, as did the rest of the members of my team, too. You know, codes that you punched in, the whole thing. So every one of us knows that every cop in that building was armed to the teeth. They had their Glock or SIG or whatever it was they were carrying. A full complement of magazines that were, I'm sure, stuffed with something very nasty if somebody got out of hand. There are reports. Study has been shown that roughly one in five cops suffers from PTSD, post-traumatic stress syndrome, or disorder, excuse me. Same thing that this Ivan Lopez shooter seemed to have. Yet the cops have access to guns routinely, without any incident. How come them, but not our troops? Well, people turn around and answer that and say, well, it's because they're sworn, you know, they're sworn law enforcement officers. Okay, they're sworn, yeah. So are our military members. They're sworn military members. They're sworn too. I know, because I took that oath. Folks, this is a military base. Military, you know, guns. It's high time we took the shackles off of our military members. We entrust them with machine guns to go overseas and kill people that we consider our enemies. Yet we don't trust them to stop someone like another Ivan Lopez or Major Nidal Hassan on their own base? What the hell is wrong with that picture? Professor John Lott was on one of the local morning radio shows this morning, and it was obvious that he was pretty dang upset. He was almost angry in his tone. It's not that he doesn't know his stuff. Of course he knows his stuff, but his tone was really angry. His words weren't, but his tone was. Why? Turns out, apparently he has a son on Fort Hood. And I'm guessing he wasn't quite sure if his boy was okay. Well, of course he's upset. He's a father. And he didn't know whether or not his son was all right. One of the injured, one of the casualties, one of the dead. He found out later, I'm sure, because later on in the day he had another interview on another show. I think it was the Mark Levin show, where he was much calmer. So apparently he got some good news. But folks, we don't trust our troops? You know, that we hail as heroes to defend themselves. Yet we'll trust the police, who suffer from the very same PTSD that sometimes our troops coming back from the sand pit suffer from. This needs to change, folks. Apparently there's some legislation that was recently introduced that would allow military members to carry their personal firearms on base, assuming they had a concealed carry permit to do so in the jurisdiction in which they are based. I think that's a really good idea. Remember, we're not talking about 18-year-olds. We're talking about 21 and up. Why? I believe it's federal law that you cannot carry concealed if you're under 21. I'll have to look that up, though, but I think it's federal. I know that's the rule in Virginia here. We really need to take the shackles off of them, because this is the second time that a gun-free zone hasn't been so gun-free after all, and people died because of it. Put guns in the hands of the good guys, folks, so that when the bad guy shows up, there are good guys that can stop him before he commits more murders. To that end, let's talk in the next section about how we get new shooters, i.e. new good guys and gals with guns in their hands. We'll address that coming up shortly. Stick around. Thank you. We're back. We have a special guest, Miss BHC. Hello, Miss BHC.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing great. Good. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm glad to be here and talking to you today.
Why, thank you.
You're welcome.
Now, please tell our listeners what BHC means.
Oh, it stands for Miss Bleeding Heart Conservative. A very short version of that story is that when I was taking political science classes at the nearby university, I had a very liberal professor tell me that I was a bleeding heart conservative. So I took that as a badge of honor.
It is. Now, a lot of our listeners are, of course, liberals, and to them, anything conservative is, oh my God. Well, guess what, folks? You are about to get some very good advice from one of those conservatives.
Oh, my.
I know. Watch out.
Okay, let's go.
Let's do it. Well, what we're here to talk about is this whole notion of getting new shooters to the sport of marksmanship. There's been an uptick in it, of course, over the years for various reasons. We'd like to talk about yours, actually, your first experience.
Sure.
Yeah. So we started about the same time, actually, you and I.
Right.
Went to a gun show, bought a gun, and ended up taking it to the range and having some experience with it. Why don't you tell us about that? You
know. Oh, well, the first time you suggested that I go to the range and shoot with you was a completely intimidating concept to me. I had this perception of guns as being something that are dangerous and big and loud and uncontrollable. I think that was the biggest part of it for me. Very uncontrollable. And, well, you asked me if I'd go anyway, and I agreed to go. So you took me to the range, and we got to the parking lot, and I stopped you. You remember that?
Oh, yeah.
And what did I say to you?
Oh, I forget what you said, actually. I just remember what you did.
Well, I think it was some variation on, I'm not quite ready to get out of the car yet.
Ah, yes.
And I think you looked over at me, and I was crying. Why was I crying? I was very intimidated, and I was a little bit afraid, I think. Extremely intimidated, more than anything, though. And I had gotten more and more stressed as we got closer to the range, because I had been thinking about that. Guns, very big, very powerful, very dangerous. I think I had this picture of a gun as something that sort of just jumped off the counter and shot at things, and I was extremely stressed. Well, how do I let off pressure? I cry. I'm a crier, no question. So I think I spent 4 or 5 minutes sitting in your car just crying my little eyes out.
Yeah, you were.
And finally I got over it, and I said, okay, let's go. I'm ready.
Mm-hmm.
At least mostly ready.
As ready as you could be under the circumstances.
Exactly.
Yeah. Understandable. You're right. A firearm is a very powerful instrument. It's a very specific tool, and you got to be very careful with it. That is true. You're right.
Well, I think more than anything was my perception, emotional more than anything, of this just being a very dangerous and powerful thing. And I think also in the back of my mind was something I had been thinking about a lot, which is that a gun can be used to kill somebody. And that really scared me, if you will.
Understandable. I used to feel the same way. You know, I remember the first time I ever shot an M16 in the Air Force. Scared the hell out of me. So I know you don't think so, but I assure you it did.
I believe you.
So now you're ready. We go into the range.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And we get ourselves signed in.
Right. And at first I had to take a test. There was a small booklet with the rules of the range, things like always point down range and always act like a gun is loaded, things like that. So there was a small test I had to take, and I completed and passed that. Mm-hmm. So now I had rights to go on to the range, and I'm sure I had to sign something to the effect of that I would follow those rules.
Oh, yeah.
So then we got to the counter, and it was a very clean range, very nicely done, very well lit. All sorts of nice, wholesome-looking folks there waiting. I look behind the counter, and of course, as typical, there's all these male range masters. And I will say, I'm not really a feminist, not much one at all, much as I appreciate some of the rights that I have and opportunities that I might not have had if feminism didn't occur. Really, right now, I'm not a feminist. But lo and behold, I look behind the counter, and there was a female range master. That kind of took me aback, but it definitely made me feel more comfortable.
How come? Do tell.
Well, again, my perception at that point in time was, oh my God, guns are so big and powerful, and you know, has given their pension to jump off of counters and do things to hurt people.
Mm-hmm.
When I saw a very, you know, pretty range master behind the counter with a gun on her hip in a holster, that was a bit of a shock, a pleasant one though. But I think that I looked at her and thought, well, okay, she's way younger and prettier than I am, but she's a range master. This was an interesting thought to me at that time. I don't know that I gave it much more thought than that, but I guess it gave me confidence.
Hmm. Like sort of a, if she can do it, you could do it?
Exactly. Exactly. So that helped. And you said that you spoke to her off to the side at some point.
I did. That is true.
What did you say?
Well, I mentioned to her, Miss BHC is a little bit intimidated by it. Matter of fact, she's a lot intimidated by this. It's her first time ever doing it. So just be aware you've got somebody totally green to this. And she said, gotcha, I'll take care of it.
Right. And she did speak to me rather nicely, comfortingly, if you will. And she suggested that we shoot in a lane that was next to the wall.
Yes.
Which, once I saw it, made perfect sense to me. So we got out on the range. The other thing I think that was somewhat intimidating to me was listening to the sound of gunfire. Because you can hear it as you work up your way up to the range. So depending on the caliber of the weapon, some of those shots were louder than others. But I think just the fact that as we got closer, it got louder, got me acclimated to the sound, which was helpful.
One of the nice things about that particular range is it has the double doors and has the fairly thick glass.
Yeah.
It helps with a lot of that. Oh, sound, well, suppression in this case.
Well, yeah, but I could see people shooting from the waiting area, and I could hear some of the sounds. So that was sort of good in desensitizing me as we got closer to doing it. So, but yeah, so we got out onto the lane, and I guess you shot first a few times just to show me.
Right, I did.
And when I realized that the guns weren't jumping up off the counter, that helped a lot.
Yeah, you know, funny, I guess they were feeling a little lazy that day. They weren't jumping off that day.
That must have been it. But that also helped. So yeah, then...
They must have been liberal guns. They just sit there lazy, you know, not doing nothing.
Of course, of course.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, mentioned I was a conservative, right?
Ba-da-psh.
Yeah. He'll be all here all week, look, folks. So then you shot a few times and I watched you, and then it got to be my turn.
Yes.
So I guess you helped me load the weapon because I didn't know what I was doing at that point. You did show me good stance. But then I did something that now I see kind of as cute. I asked you if you would put your hand on my back. Why? Because, again, I thought, oh, my goodness, this gun's going to, you know, the recoil is going to push me halfway across the range.
Well, if you haven't done it before and all you've seen is what's on the movies and TV, yeah, it's easy to get that impression.
But
sure.
But I appreciated that you didn't make fun of me.
No, you don't do that.
Well, of course, but that helped me. So then I raised up the gun and took my stance, and, you know, I had learned about through the test and some things that you had showed me about the rear sight and the front sight, and I aimed. I don't recall. How did I do?
You hit the bullseye your first time.
Oh, yeah, I do that sometimes, don't I?
Yeah. I'm going to tell you all something, all you listening to this. Miss BHC turns out to have a natural gift for shooting. I wish I had the gift.
Thank you.
There's another fellow that I know that, and once I became a range master, had it as well. And he's just as good as she is. If they were to practice more, either one of them could actually be competitive.
Well.
And your first demonstration to me of that was your very first shot in your life.
Well, but again, and that was something else I think that contributed to getting me over my apprehension. Nothing succeeds like success.
True.
And when I saw that I could do it and do it well, that wasn't lost on me. And the other thing that we discovered was that I have this unconscious tendency to shoot, and I can never get it right.
Single action.
Single action. I just automatically cocked the hammer back.
Right.
Without thinking about it.
Yeah, for those of you who... or wondering just what kind of gun we're talking about. We're talking about a revolver, and specifically a revolver in .45 Colt.
Right.
And a double action revolver in .45 Colt.
Right. But that, of course, doing it in that way, cocking the hammer back first makes the, at least on that weapon, the trigger pull was a little less difficult. And I guess that helped as well. But I don't know. I must have been a gunslinger in a former life, as you've said. Yeah, partner.
Yeehaw! Actually, you may well have been, given the way you shoot now.
Well, that may be. That could explain a lot, but only, you know, white hat one anyway. But I think the fact that I did well and it didn't completely blow out my eardrums, all that was good. And that definitely helped make me feel more comfortable. So that by the end of that session, I think I was just swimming along quite nicely.
Yeah. We're going to take a quick break for a station ID, and we're going to continue with this story in just a moment. Stick around, partners. Okay, we're back. We're talking with Miss BHC, Miss Bleeding Heart Conservative here, about the first time she ever went shooting. I got her to go shooting with me one day. This was some years ago.
Yeah.
And by the way, good thing you did because, well, now look at you. You can defend yourself now. That's really good.
Yeah.
When we last left our little story, you had just taken your first shots, hit the bullseye.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was just sitting there going, grumble, grumble, grumble. How come I can't have that kind of gift?
Aw.
Yeah. But I did take heart in one thing.
Which was?
Something you told me later on after we'd gotten back from the range.
Oh?
Yeah. You did tell me, this gun's a little too hot for me.
Well, yeah. I remember shooting that weapon later, taking two shots. They were extremely accurate. And I remember putting the gun down on the counter and saying, okay, I'm good. I'm done.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. But now my current weapon...
Yes. So I went ahead and bought that weapon from you. The 45 Colt revolver. It was a lightweight 45 Colt revolver that does snap quite a bit, admittedly. Even I don't much care for the snappiness of it. So we went out and got her a Taurus Model 65, which we've talked about, by the way, in a previous episode. Now, this is in 357 Magnum.
Right. Which I don't tend to shoot out of it.
Which you don't tend to shoot out of it. You tend to shoot 38 Special.
38 Special powder buff.
Well, not the first time. Not at first.
No. All right.
Yeah.
All right.
Because at first, I hadn't started reloading yet.
Right. That's right.
Right. So I was buying the ammo from the range.
Right.
It was the standard 38 Special loading.
Right.
You know, jacketed, full metal jacket, all that sort of thing. So we had decided to go learn how to use these darn things.
Right.
And so we took a concealed handgun permit course.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's the NRA basic pistol course.
Exactly.
So I thought that would help you and me, for that matter. I mean, I didn't really have to take it because we're in Virginia and I have my DD-214, but just the same, I thought it was a good idea, so we went.
That helped me a great deal. I have to mention that the person who taught the class was a female former Secret Service agent and former Air Marshal.
Matter of fact, she was the first female Air Marshal after September the 11th.
I didn't realize that. And when you say female Air Marshal and female Secret Service agent, not to paint with a broad brush, but you think of someone who was a substantial and stern person. Well, Tina didn't quite fit that mold. She's very cute, just about my height, just not somebody you'd say, oh, I'm so scared of this person. However, put a weapon in her hand.
Yeah.
Completely different impact. However, so we went to the class. I enjoyed it thoroughly. Part of it was because as Tina began to teach the class and review the concepts, I became even more comfortable with the weapons there. She taught us how to take them apart. She taught us the rules again, which I had already learned. I guess that the instructor made me feel that I could control this situation. In fact, one little story during the class, one of my fellow classmates who had just purchased his weapon the day before and who was holding a weapon that was completely unloaded managed to sweep me from across the room.
Not good.
Not good. And Tina spoke up immediately, and I did as well. And I'm not a person, as you know, that's given to being very loud or forceful.
As I recall, I spoke up too.
Yes, we all did. But I was impressed with myself for speaking up on my own behalf, and the other gentleman learned quite quickly, okay, don't point a weapon at anybody, even if you think it's not loaded. So then we got to the range after all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And you can tell this part of it.
Okay. Well, Miss BHC ended up getting a new nickname, and I'll tell you how she got it. We're sitting there shooting our various firearms, you know, shooting lead downrange at these little 3x5 cards. The instructor believes, and I also follow, aim small, miss small. You have a small target so that you're encouraged to aim properly. And it really does work. So I had a few boxes of ammunition. I had 38 Special for Miss BHC, and I had some 357 Magnum for myself. So Miss BHC's turn comes to go punch holes in the target in this little 3x5 card. It's about 4 yards. Remember, this is a basic pistol course. She grabs the 357 Magnum ammo without realizing it. I didn't realize it either until she had already sent lead downrange. And I saw that she was doing just fine with it, so I thought, you know, tell her later so that she realizes that she can do it if she needs to. Yeah. So she takes 12 rounds of it. The instructor comes over, and it's at that point that I mention, Miss BHC, you're shooting the 357 loads. Do you know that?
And I kind of looked up at you wonderingly, like, really?
Yeah, you did.
Did I do that?
And the instructor said, really? I said, yeah, she is. And she didn't even realize it. Look what she did to the target. And you had this little tiny group. Gee, big surprise giving it to you.
Thank you.
The instructor goes, wow, Magnum woman.
But see, at that particular moment, I was surrounded mostly by people, most of which whom hadn't shot before, or at least hadn't shot a lot.
Right.
And they were newbies.
Including me, by the way.
As newbie as me.
Yes.
Including the guy that slept me. But anyway, yeah. So I was focused on listening to what the instructor had told me. I was focused on that little 3x5 card, and I was focused on doing well. That took everything away from me and any apprehension I might have still had, and focused on getting the hole through the paper. And I was so focused, as you said, I didn't even realize I was shooting Magnum rounds. Didn't faze me in the least. But that was another one of those things that increased my confidence. I was focused on doing proper form, putting the hole in the paper, and that worked out quite well, apparently.
Yeah, it did. And that's how you became Magnum woman.
Well, yeah.
Uh-huh. But you don't typically shoot those, though.
No, I don't. But at least I know I can. And again, we'll go back to that. Nothing succeeds like success. When I knew at the end of that class that, A, I could take a weapon apart and put it back together, that I understood all the parts of it, and that I could shoot well, that definitely did a lot to increase my confidence.
Now, when I take you to the range, what tends to happen?
I put holes in the paper.
I'll be a little more specific. You put holes in the bullseye.
Oh, well, yes. Yes, I do.
Yes. Now, you don't typically shoot the Magnum rounds. Now that I reload, and I've taught you how to reload, there's some videos showing her doing this, by the way, both making and shooting them.
Yes.
Oh, matter of fact, you ought to check out the video up on the website or on YouTube. Miss BHC shoots her 38 Special reloads, and you'll see what she can do with it.
Well, again, yeah. And I made this little cute comment during the reloading video, which was that it's like crocheting, I think is what I said.
Needlepoint,
thank you. I'm really good at needlepoint. So my comment was, you can do this. It's like needlepoint, which kind of sounds cute. But, I mean, honestly, I think a lot of women are intimidated by the prospect of reloading. And once I realized that I could make a good round and that round could go through the paper and that round could go through the bullseye, that definitely did something for me.
Sure it did. Now, you shoot nowadays what is what I typically call the Powder Puff 38 Special. It's a light load, and if you really want to know the specifics of it, we talk about that in the videos.
Right.
But this is something that you do shoot.
Right. There's nothing that succeeds like success. One of the important aspects of this is that my weapon is good for me. I find that I can hold it completely well. It's a good ergonomic fit for me. When I take proper stance and when I take a proper grip, I feel comfortable. I don't feel like the weapon's going to jump up out of my hands. And I can control it quite well. I don't have any problem with recoil at all.
Oh, yes, which brings to mind, how does it compare to that 45 Colt from the first time?
Oh, much better.
I thought so.
But on the other hand, I know that if I had to pick, I now have a feeling in my gut that if I could pick up any weapon if necessary in a self-defense situation and defend myself effectively.
That's what matters.
Right.
We're going to take a short station ID break. We will be back and we'll continue this with another example of a first-time shooter building off of Miss BHC's own experience. Stick around. Howdy, partners. We're back. We just got through talking about Miss BHC's first time shooting, how she felt. That matters for getting first-time shooters, how people feel about the notion of firearms, marksmanship, that whole sort of thing. And the end results, some things that might help. And now she shoots. This is good, and she's good at it.
Thank you.
We'd like to discuss another example for you here. This one involves not just Miss BHC, but my mother. I got my mom to enjoy the sport of marksmanship, and now she actually does occasionally go and shoot. We're going to tell you how we did that, and I did have the help of Miss BHC here.
Thank you.
Well, this is a particularly, less than optimal situation, we'll say, because the first time my mother ever shot a gun, my stepfather was trying to introduce her to the idea. Unfortunately, he didn't do it in the most optimal way for a 5'8", 135-pound, willowy blonde woman who had never done this in her life before. And I tell you that because she's not physically large. She's strong, but she's not large. She doesn't have a lot of beef like, say, I do. I weigh 230 pounds. Well, he gives her his Benelli M1 12-gauge shotgun with double-aught buckshot. Didn't teach her to hold it against her shoulder. I'm sure you all can figure out what just happened. The result was she didn't ever want to touch a gun again because her shoulder hurt so badly. I'm surprised she didn't dislocate it.
I don't blame her.
Yeah, and when I heard about this, I just about hit the ceiling. So she didn't want to touch a gun again. I actually had to pull the I'm your son and I would never hurt you card. I should play that card. Because I knew there was no other way to do it. I did mention that Miss BHC also shot 38 Special. There's a family friend that we have from decades ago, a wonderful woman, who skis. And this is one of the things that got my mom to want to consider skiing. She said, well, gosh, you know, if we'll call her Mary. If Mary can ski, gosh, so can I.
Well, your mom is a very beautiful, tall, willowy blonde, and I am not. She's definitely more fit than me, even though she's older than me. And she's a very accomplished woman, one whom I admire greatly. And maybe I'm intimidated by her just a little bit.
Well, you're not the only one who is. I know a lot of people who are. I'm her son. I can't be intimidated by her, but you know how that goes. Your kids are never intimidated by you.
No, of course not. But I do have the utmost respect for her and great admiration.
And she is an accomplished lady. That is certainly true. She also doesn't want to get hurt again.
I don't blame her.
So I explained to her that you do it. And since she is this willowy yet fairly physically strong woman, that got her to thinking, well, okay, if Miss BHC can do it, then maybe I can possibly do it. And, well, my son just told me he wouldn't, you know, ever hurt me. And he does do this a lot. So, okay. That was sort of her attitude.
Right. And you guys were talking before I came over.
Right. So I unloaded my Security 6, gave it to her to handle, and taught her basically how it operated. And you know that fellow that you mentioned before about sweeping people in the class?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she swept me.
Oops.
This is, the one time I've ever actually forcefully grabbed my mother's wrist.
Oops.
Yeah, and the gun as well, and just moved it. Gently took it out of her hand at that point and explained, okay, Mom, we don't ever let the business end point at people, okay? She was a little shocked by it. That's why I went into calm mode. I went into Prozac mode. Thank you for teaching me that.
Not a problem.
And
I work in politics, you know.
I understand, Representative.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Thank you, my constituent.
Oh, gee, I thought I was senator. Oh, well, I guess
later.
I'm just your constituent.
Yeah, for now.
Okay. Well, the constituent here decided, okay, I need to explain to Mom, you don't let the business end point at anyone for any reason unless you actually intend to do something to them. It was totally accidental, just like that fella in the class that we took.
Mm-hmm.
Her response was, but I thought it wasn't loaded.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I explained, okay, Mom, rule number one of gun safety, All guns are always loaded. There is no such thing as a quote-unquote unloaded gun. And I said about that tone, too.
Right.
Because, hey, we're talking about something that intimidates the hell out of her.
Right.
And my stepfather, who was there, agreed very quickly and wholeheartedly.
He's a more experienced shooter. He was.
Somewhat. He's not that experienced, but certainly more than she was.
Right.
You know, he's had a Browning high power that he's had for decades. It's a beautiful piece.
Mm.
So, we got past that. Then I had asked you to come on over because right. I figured, okay, I'm going to need some help on this one.
Right.
I'm going to need some help from somebody a hell of a lot smoother than I am.
Right.
Besides, I'm her son. She's my mother. She's my parent. Let's face it. Someone who's not the kid is a lot easier to listen to.
Well, yeah. So I showed up.
You show up. We talk about it. You know, the hugs get exchanged and all that.
Right. Hi. Right.
All that business. So we discuss the rules, the basic rules of firearm safety. We go over them and you're your usual bubbly self and all that business.
Right.
So then we get in the car and the four of us head to the range.
Right.
This is now the same range that I occasionally work at as a range master.
Right.
So we get there. You know, we get all signed in, the whole thing, and then, you know, we put on the eyes and ears and we head out to the range, and then something magical happened.
Well, as I said, I think the world of your mom. She's an extremely accomplished woman, and I look up to her greatly. What I found, however, was that I started in a very kind of casual, chatty tone, reviewing the rules of the range. And I looked at your mom, and she was staring at me intently, and it came to me that she really thought that it was important that she listened to me and that apparently I knew what I was talking about. So she continued to listen to me and I continued to talk. And I explained to her my experience with shooting, proper stance, proper, you know, etiquette of the range, a few other things. But it did tickle me that your mom felt that it was important for her to listen to me. I was kind of flattered by that, if you will. So, but it also showed me that she was taking it rather seriously, which is what a first-time shooter should do.
True, yes.
So, and then we got out onto the range. So, I guess you did a little bit more.
Yeah, we discussed a few things, and I said, okay, here it is. The time has come. I'll demonstrate first.
And you did.
And I did. At that point, I had been reloading for a little while, and so the powder puff load for .38 Special was already well in use.
Right, and then I shot a bit, right?
Right. First I shot, and she said, oh, okay, hey, that's pretty good. That doesn't look so bad.
Right.
But then again, I'm a 230-pound adult man.
And you're her son, so of course you knew how to do it.
Yeah, and gee, thank you.
You're welcome.
Right. However, then I asked you to shoot.
Right, and then I got this deadly serious look on my face.
You did.
And I stepped up to the range.
And you got busy.
And I think I made a few side comments to your mom, especially your folks, about what I was doing and how I was doing it and why I was doing it. But I think I must have shot pretty well. As you say, I'm a pretty good shot.
Yeah,
naturally.
You are. Yeah, you are.
So,
And you did that time, too.
Right. But I just did what I do at the range. And I think that helped your mom to some extent. Because to look at me, I don't present myself as a very powerful or strong person. I am rather giggly and light, very smooth.
Until you're aiming downrange.
Well, until I'm aiming downrange, precisely. And I think that your mom did take a lesson from that, or she noticed that I was apparently doing quite well. So I think that just paved the way even further. And I think maybe in addition to that was the fact that I wasn't intimidated at that point. When I got onto the range, I was well past that crying out in the cars portion period
True.
Of my life.
Yeah. Matter of fact, I know what a drill instructor is like because I've been through basic training.
Yes.
I won't say you were quite like that. No, because you weren't. You didn't use the word maggot, for example.
This is your mom.
Yeah, I know. I'm just having a little fun.
Yeah.
But you did get serious with instruction. I mean, you just basically took over the entire session. I just sort of stood back and let you do it because you were doing it fine.
Well, if you have somebody that's listening to you, that puts a responsibility on you, I feel. If you're taking somebody's, well, to a small extent, life into your hands and you're showing them the proper at, you know, the proper stance and the proper activities and the way to do things correctly, that's a responsibility that you take on. And so I took that rather seriously. And this is your mom. As I said, I hold her in very high esteem.
Well, it seemed to do pretty well because...
Then your mom stepped up.
Right. I don't know if you recall how she did.
No, I don't.
Okay. Fortunately, I do. I was enjoying the way you were instructing her, actually.
Okay. Well,
yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
So, her first time shooting a handgun ever. Now, this was the Powder Puff 38 Special, though, the same one that you shoot, and that I discovered that I like a lot, too.
Right.
I shoot it a lot, too, nowadays.
Right.
So, she picks up the Security 6. It's a fairly substantial Ruger, as Rugers are.
Right.
So, she cocks the hammer back, just like you do.
Right.
And for the first time, she pulled the trigger, and pop, there it went. Now, she was off to the left on this 8.5x11 paper. We had an 8.5x11 target that I print out. I Xerox them, a bunch of them off at once. And it was at about, I don't know, 4.5 or so yards, something close, right?
Right.
She was on the paper. She was to the left, but she was on the paper.
Right.
First shot, she's on the paper. A lot of people can't do that.
Right. I mean, we go to the range, and I see folks shooting with the large 28x36 targets.
Oh, yeah, the big old silhouette targets, yeah.
Right, right, and they're all over the paper, and we're talking about a target that's maybe 4 yards down or 5 yards down range.
8.5x11.
Yeah, a little bit different.
Right, her first shot, she's on the paper. And as time went, I think she took two cylinders worth of rounds. As time went, she got close to that bullseye.
There is one important thing to mention, though.
Yes, what?
She enjoyed it.
She did.
She felt comfortable. She wasn't intimidated. And she didn't go away with her shoulder aching either.
No, she didn't.
Right.
After those first six, we brought the target in, took a look at it, and we counted all six, and we gave her congratulations. She nailed the paper. Then we sent it back out to 4.5 yards and had her do it again, and she took the other six, and she was a little bit closer.
I think she wasn't happy the first time around. She really was much more pleased with the tighter group.
Well, who wouldn't be?
Well, okay.
Gee, that's natural. I'm the same way.
Yeah.
And as the day went on, she got yet closer to the bullseye, and she even actually nailed the bullseye a few times.
Mm-hmm.
The patterns got tighter.
Mm-hmm.
I think, correct me if I'm wrong, we had talked before about, what would help, say, new shooters, generally speaking, you know, based on your own experience.
Right.
Part of that is an instruction.
Right.
Part of that is making sure that they feel safe.
Right.
Part of that is, I think, low recoil.
Right. Well, I think there's a couple of aspects to that. When you're put in a situation where you don't feel like you have control, where you feel like you're in possibly even in danger, where you feel like things are going to happen to you that you can't anticipate, your anxiety level is going to naturally go up. On the other side, if you're given good instruction, if you're put in a position where you understand what's happening, you understand the mechanics of the gun, you understand that you're going into a safe environment, one that's reasonably well under your control, that completely changes the game. Once I had gone through that class with you, I felt completely different about shooting. Once I understood that I could do well at this, I felt even better about shooting. I think the same thing happened with your mom. She's a very deliberate and wise person and extremely intelligent. And I think once she got an opportunity in that setting to see what was going on, she saw somebody like me that she certainly likes, but when she saw that I could do well at it, and she saw that this was an environment where safety was primary, because she does have a great deal of concern for other people, I think that made a complete difference for her. And then when she did well on top of that, so I'd say knowledge, a good environment, good preparation, some reassuring words, if you will, or knowledge, all go hand in hand to make a person feel that they can be successful at this and comfortable. I'd say for women, a lot of it is comfort for most women in any event.
I can assure you that the same is true for men as well. Certainly this one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because let's face it. The thing coming out of the business end of any gun is moving at a very high velocity and can hurt someone if it's aimed at them.
Exactly.
Everyone knows that.
Exactly. I mean, I definitely, if I didn't mention it earlier, I definitely had a great consciousness of the fact that a weapon can hurt a person. But I think, as I've said in the past, when there's a bad situation, you want a good, when there's a bad guy with a gun, you want a good guy or gal with a gun. And to me, knowing that in some environment, I could actually save somebody, protect them, or defend them, that means a lot.
Mm-hmm. And just as a, what is the word when you use a epilogue?
Yeah. Go right ahead.
Mom doesn't have a whole lot of opportunity to shoot just because life happens, kind of like you.
Right.
But she and my stepfather actually do enjoy occasional trips to the range. Now, unfortunately, it being out in California, it's a little hard to do that because ranges aren't as common as they are where we live.
Right.
But, I mean, and therefore, going to the range is basically a day-long ordeal. But they still do it sometimes. They still do it occasionally, and I think that's a really good thing.
Well,
so now we have a new shooter.
And I think especially you talk about inviting new shooters, but I'll speak from the aspect of women shooters, let's say, or female shooters, that the more one sees that there are other women in the field, looks at the resources. I mean, certainly YouTube is a wonderful thing, and you can find me out on YouTube now, right, or on your page.
Yeah, you can.
But I think being able to find videos of other people shooting and web pages with information about shooting and having the instructor who was a female former Secret Service and Air Marshal, that definitely made a difference for me.
Mm-hmm.
So, and now I shoot reasonably regularly. Right. Not often, but regularly.
Yeah, we'll fix that.
Okay. And yeah. I don't cry in the car anymore, as I said.
That's true. And what you mentioned about, you know, female shooters and, you know, seeing other women out there doing it, I've noticed the same thing applies to racial minorities.
Oh, really?
Yes. That's one of the things that, oh, for example, Monsieur Mike at the range.
Yes.
He's a black man.
Yes.
And black people will walk in and see him and they'll go, oh, huh, okay, maybe I can do this.
Well, I think especially, well, most people won't say that Virginia is the South, at least not most Southerners, but I think that the predominant race of people in ranges are white, but I think that anything that goes towards making somebody of color or another ethnicity feel more comfortable is always important.
Right. And so for those of us out here who would like to, say, evangelize the sport of shooting, marksmanship, might want to take these little tips that you've heard us talking about into account here. And, you know, because by all means, you know, spread the word about it. Firearms and the Second Amendment is not a Republican right. It is not a Democrat right. It's not one of these, what is now commonly called liberal or conservative rights. It's simply a civil right.
I'm like an American.
And like any other right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So to speak.
Well, it's true. And the key to freedom is the ability to be able to defend yourself. And I would suggest that if, without the tools to do that, you're at the mercy of those that might possibly do you harm.
And I think with every right becomes a responsibility.
Of course it does. Yeah. That's why we talk about instruction.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we emphasize the rules of firearm safety
mm-hmm.
over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
That's why as a range master, I'm somewhat of a range Nazi.
Mm-hmm.
Because I have to be.
Well, yes, of course.
And I think that might also hopefully that puts some people at ease knowing that this is a safe environment.
Right. Right. I mean, when you walk into a range, you see that it's clean. You see that the range masters are patient and understanding. You see that they're appreciative of you stepping out and using your skills. That makes a big difference.
Agreed. Ms. BHC, thank you so much for coming on the program again.
My pleasure.
And for all those of you out there listening, listen to this lady, what you just heard. She's right. It's Cowboy T signing off until the next time. Till then, safe shooting. Practice often.
Okay, I get it.
And as always, thanks for listening.